Hey everybody, welcome back. I'm Michael Hagan, Chief Instructor at Apex Kata Performance. And thanks for tuning in for part two of my conversation with Kenji Hirai. In this part of the conversation, he talks about some of his training ideas and training philosophies, things that make up a good instructor, and ends off with his ideas for what his ideal dojo would be like. This part of the conversation is a little bit long, go over just over an hour, but I sure hope you stick with it, because he's got a lot of really good information, and it was a pleasure talking with Kenji.
And so I'm kind of curious on to your perspective on like the state of karate as you see it right now in Okinawa.
Right. I think, again, I can only speak for myself. I can't say, you know, oh, I see, you know, this and whatnot. Like, again, from my experience is extremely narrow in the broad perspective of everyone's karate and whatnot. But from what I see in Okinawa karate is I feel that with let me try to think how I can answer that question. For me, I feel the best way to really explain is that let me just go into the idea of from what you said, like, you know, I have skills from boxing and wrestling and whatnot. And so when I do karate and whatnot, I feel that as a preface, I want to say this is that I feel it's very important to do the karate as your instructor tells you to do it, you know, whatnot. But when you're studying it by yourself, you just be like, okay, then when you study by yourself, you really can't start to see concepts and whatnot. Like, oh, I've seen this before in, you know, whatever it could be, like maybe judo or boxing and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I could hit him, you know, I could punch him with my hand from right here, from my guard or something like that. And so in that sense, you know, I think it's very important for people to study outside of karate, like some things, like, you know, some concepts of, but I think the most important thing that, and people may think that's a little bit, maybe I may be thinking a bit of a dogma, or maybe my mind's too narrow. It's never to intertwine those concepts, I feel, into karate. So you're not going to do like boxing drills with your karate, I feel. That's like something that I kind of got dinged on when I was a little bit younger. I kind of did that and it kind of got dinged on it. And I think that there's a real merit behind that, because it's I think it's like, yes, learn from that, but instead of like incorporating it into your karate, it's just, well, yes, incorporate into your karate, but it's kind of hard to say. It's like incorporate into your karate, but don't make that part of karate, you know what I mean? It's kind of like,
I think I understand exactly what you mean. Yeah. So the way I kind of like to differentiate it, and maybe this will help, is there's, for example, organizationally, we're going to do it this way, right?
Right.
We're going to, you know, whatever Oshiro sensei says, and then, you know, it comes down and, you know, he teaches you and he teaches me and, you know, all the other senseis, and we pass that on. But then,
right,
you know, like we've talked about even just at the beginning, you know, Shihan is doing his own practice on the side. And sometimes that will influence what he teaches you, or he's like, hey, we're going to make some tweaks. But at the same time, at the individual level, at the Kenji and the Michael level, we should be doing our own training.
Right.
And discovering
looking things, at different things. Yeah.
But looking at different things, but doing our own training, and even like, okay, well, if I move my hips differently here in this kata, I can do the move differently, but I'm also doing it more. I'll give you an example. You know, Wanshu, right? Last time I was in,
right,
we were working on Wanshu, and at the part where you go up at the end and then you turn around, right? Well, I was having a big difficulty doing that move. For some reason, I just kept getting stuck and I kept losing my balance and I kept wobbling and I wasn't doing it very well, until the point where I sat down and I really watched the kata. And then I went, okay, well, what did Shihan tell me this move is? Like, what's the bunkai for this? Oh, well, I'm hitting and I'm maybe doing a throw, and, you know, depending on my body and where the other person ends up, I'm either hitting and turning, or I'm doing a hip throw or a leg throw around the thing. And then I'm like, okay, well, let me step back and go back to some of my, when I did throws in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, for example. Well, how would I enter into that movement? And where would I put my feet? Where would I put my hips? And then when I turned my foot
as I enter from here into the other move, when I put my foot the same way I would enter in an actual throw, then I was able to actually do the move.
Right.
And so that's what I mean on the individual level. We need to be continuing to explore and to think and
right.
to develop on how we do our kata. But, you know, unless, of course, it's direction from Shihan, that
right.
shouldn't necessarily change. It can have an influence, but it shouldn't necessarily change what we're teaching, for example, if that makes sense.
Right, exactly. Yeah, precisely. And like for another example is when I... the thing is, by the way, with Bunkai and whatnot, to be frank, I was never really taught directly by Shihan in like a sit down, let me teach you guys Bunkai kind of thing. It comes out very naturally within the training and whatnot. And so when we're doing a kata together or something, or just even a single movement and whatnot, you know, he just kind of like plops it in there. Like really, it's this kind of thing. And so it's kind of like the person who hears it kind of is the only one who gets the information. He never kind of like lays it. It's not like in a book, or he never tells everyone, hey, everyone, this is what you're doing kind of thing. So yeah. If you're there and you heard it, you're lucky you got the information. And then you kind of keep that kernel within you kind of thing. And so that's how we were taught Bunkai and everything. But the one thing I was always told by him was, and I think in that sense, it might be a little bit tad different, is when we do Bunkai or when we do applications and whatnot, and this is also came from me in my experience, is that the opponent never just sits there. He is very active. He is very aware of you. And although the one caveat that I must say with wrestling and boxing is that it's, in Japanese, we have a saying, it's you're on equal footing and you're on equal standings and whatnot. So it's very different from Karate Bunkai in that sense. And I think that's the one concept that I would like to lay out there. When it comes to wrestling or boxing, you're equal. He has 8-ounce gloves. I have 8-ounce gloves. We weigh 135 pounds approximately on fight day and whatnot. You know, things could fluctuate in the weight, but there's a referee, you know, no hits to the back of the head, other, you know, this, that, the other kind of thing. And within wrestling, it's there's a set amount of rules. Don't go outside the ring. Don't pin him, do this stuff. Don't use your elbows and whatnot. Don't knee him and blah, 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 whatnot. But when it comes to Karate Bunkai, it's you know, no hands barred kind of thing.
Right.
But in that sense, what I learned from boxing and wrestling, which was very important, is that sometimes, I'm not going to say what styles, but because everyone's guilty of this, when they sometimes do Bunkai, the guy comes in and he just sits there. It's like, right. No. He is going to definitely, and then it's even interesting because when I practice with Nicholas, by the way, and it's a fascinating thing. I never thought of this until recently, is for example, we strike the rib and whatnot. He mentioned something, Nicholas, that I never thought of, which was there's going to be a reaction to that. Like he's going to tuck his shoulder in. He's going to do this and whatnot. And then that completely changed the Bunkai forever, like entirely. Because I thought, oh, if I just strike him here, my fist is still going to be here or my hand is still going to be here. Therefore, I could do something else. But then it's like, no, he's going to have an adverse reaction to that. So then how do we move around that? And I was like, okay, now we have to start from square one. And it wasn't a bad thing. It was like, oh. I never thought of that. And it's kind of weird because I always did. I had experience with boxing and it was like when you sunk a liver shot into a guy, there was an adverse reaction, but I never really thought of that within karate. So then I was like, oh, okay, well, there's that. And also it's like, if you grab his arm, he's going to pull or he's going to pivot, you know, or he's going to move to the side. So then it's like, you have to make those adjustments within the Bunkai and whatnot. So then I think my experience with that really helped, build my understanding with that. But again, at the same time, I don't add those I'm not like I'm boxing him kind of thing, you know. So it's that.
Well, that's where
idea, yes.
This goes back to what you just said, kind of goes back on a conversation that we were texting about a while back, about how it's you know, and because I've referenced, you know, sport, you know, in this conversation, even we've talked about sport right. karate and traditional karate and a variety of different topics. And I kind of have this feeling that, you know, there's no such thing as sport or traditional karate. It's how karate, your karate is how you train it, what you choose to exercise. But kind of, I think these concepts that we're talking about here stem largely from the way we train. It's not that they're absent in karate, but we go mm-hmm. to the dojo. I mean, it's the same, you know, it's the same in just about every dojo, right? You start class, you do warm-ups, you do some kihon, you do
right.
some kata techniques, or you do, you know, whatever the topic that the instructor wants to talk about that day, that's what right. you do. And mm-hmm. maybe you'll do some bunkai, or maybe, you know, depending on where you're at, you maybe do some like WKF or JKF style kumite sparring or something like that. But
right.
it's not that those things are there. It's that over time, the way our training has evolved, that sometimes we leave those things out, or they get forgotten. Or if you're teaching a mixed class to where you've got anywhere from 10 to 10 years old, you know, you've got a 10-year-old brown right. belt, you know, EQ or NIQ right. maybe, or a 12-year-old mm-hmm. EQ, and then you've got, you know, adult, you know, at all ranks up through, you know, various levels of dan ranks, sometimes mm-hmm. you can't sit here and just necessarily throw the 12-year-old kid around all day long.
Right. yeah, of course.
Right.
And I think, what you said there really strikes a chord. It's like, I guess you could put me in the category of people when it comes to karate. It's like, I don't view it as, how can I say this? I never viewed it as something that's like, you know, maybe as a kid, when I was first, you know, sent there by my mother and whatnot, it was kind of like, you know, exercise, you know, kind of like learn discipline, you know, get the snotling in order kind of thing. Like that was probably, you know, the original thing with it. But then as I grew to love karate, I find myself more like maybe kids my age were more interested in, you know, winning the gold medal and whatnot. But then I found myself hitting the makiwata
right.
a whole lot more. Be like, I want to really be able to, you know, maybe it was a little bit of a mean streak in this meet. I was like, I want to learn how to punch properly. I wanted to learn how to kick properly. So it was, I for me, like I said, it's like you exactly said, like karate is what the practitioner wants to achieve and whatnot. But I never thought it was like, you know, a performance art. It was like, if you know, if it comes down to it, if I have to use my hands, then I'll defend myself. That's how I always viewed it as. But then that's not the only thing that exists in this world,
right?
Kind of thing. And again, like I said, I'm a firm believer in that karate is Bushin's self-defense. That's what it is. That's what always remains. But if someone says, "I like I love competing. I love that thrill before, you know, the match. I like that feeling before they lift up the flags or the scorecards." Like, you know, it's like no. I can't say to that person what you're doing is wrong, or, you know, whatever was in the Olympics or whatever was in the WKF is a blasphemy or whatever. I can't say that, because in my opinion, those people work just as hard, or if not harder, than the majority of, you know, people that practice karate. So who am I to say that what they are doing is wrong? And on top of that, I never took part in it until recently,
right.
what that training is. So it's not to me to say what you're doing is wrong. It's like, okay, well, that's what they like doing is what they like doing. It's that's their thing. that's all I could say it to.
See, I really appreciate that you say that. I mean, from a long time ago, I've had this kind of foot in both worlds, if you will. And, mm-hmm. but not everybody, you know, the Olympics just ended. And obviously, you know, you're there in Okinawa and Kyunadio
right.
Sanchu, he got the gold medal in male kata.
It's a parade over here.
yeah. I can imagine.
I could actually see the Karate Kaikon from my apartment, by the way. But if you, I don't have a picture of it, but if you enter the entrance of the Karate Kaikon, there's this huge banner with characters congratulating Kyunadio for his achievement, getting the gold medal in the male kata competition. But again, it's like, I think the best way to describe that is, I think for me to say this is that I don't understand any of the Ryu-Eiryu kata. I don't.
Right.
I have no understanding of it. I know Anan or Ohan or Ohandai or Anandai because I've seen it before. But who am I to say that's not real karate? But who, right. who am I to say about it? Because I've never done it. So it's like I would just be like, but what he achieved is I mean, like how many people could do that? Not a lot, in my opinion. So not a lot. Not a whole lot. All I could say is, you know, if someone has qualms about it, then I say, well, then reproduce what he did or do better. And I don't think a lot of people could do that. So then it's like, okay, but then, you know, I always believe that. So it's like, well, you know,
because you're exactly right there. Because, you know, one thing I saw a lot, especially on social media, and sometimes I really hate Facebook and things like that, but there was so much public outcry by karate people against, you know, that's not real karate, that's not this, that's not that, you know, and not just kuna, the kata, but also the kumite, and like, oh no, we do self-defense and we do practical applied bunkai and all of that. But even yourself, you're an example of how you can do all of those things. Right. We just talked about how all of this year you were training to compete, you know, and it's not your fault that you weren't able to compete. It's because of the coronavirus and the things got canceled. Right. But then just last Thursday or last week, you know, you're practicing, you know, throws and bunkai and like here, like this is a throw. Right. And that's where, you know, the level of thinking about it, the way you're applying the karate is what I find fascinating, because you're also one of those examples of how your karate can be any and all of that, depending on what you choose to focus on.
Right. And I think the other part is that I'll be honest with you, when I first heard about the karate is being put into Olympics, I'm not going to lie, I was a bit miffed about it. I was like, okay, so I was like, well, how is this going to be represented? And then obviously the most obvious representation is the WKF. I mean, as much as people gnash their teeth about it and they don't like it, it's like, that's the face of karate with what it is now. Like, you know, I mean, the thing is that this is me coming from a boxing perspective and whatnot, and wrestling perspective as well. I mean, boxing is huge, right, and whatnot. But not everyone likes seeing guys getting knocked out and getting cuts on their faces from boxing. It's not so marketable, you know. Right. That's why in Olympic boxing they have the gloves. They wear those, you know, puffy gloves, and they put on the headgear, so you don't really see those brutal knockouts and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, people saying that karate should be like, you know, like that Kyokushin style or that Shotokan full contact, and say like that's the karate that should be on the forefront. I'm like, but we have to understand, like, the Olympics is for everyone to watch. It's like not a niche thing. And then if people want karate to be like that, I think it's very difficult, because like you and I said before, what some people think karate deemed to be is not what it could be for 90% of the people and whatnot. So for me, the only wrong type of karate is the one that if you teach, you know, people how to, like, you could disarm a gun in front of you kind of thing. I mean, that kind of stuff, I'm like, okay, that's kind of suspect. But if it's like, you know, this is how you win a tournament, and, you know, it's about form, you have to, you know, just like the shite-kata in JKF, like you need to end the form like this. You need to stop perfectly still here. You need to have the proper timing for this and whatnot. I think that's a skill set that could be applied to traditional karate, which kind of goes into another thing, by the way, and whatnot. You mentioned that you went to Oshoda Sensei to get tips from Super Rinpe, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, well, people who probably listen to your podcast know Super Rinpe, they obviously practice it as well. So I don't think I have to tell them what it is. It's a very difficult kata, let's just say that. And it's Goju-ryu. It's not Shoryu-ryu. There's no movements very few movements in Super Rinpe that are in Shoryu-ryu. However, you were able to take those concepts and be able to apply them to the Shoryu-ryu or Shimaha Shoryu-ryu ideas into your Goju-ryu. The one thing that I have to say about this is that within the sports realm, or the people from the sports karate side of things, they seem much more open to the idea of adopting new ideas.
Yes.
So if it's like, you know, in traditional karate, we use this, this, this. It's not about using your muscle mass. It's not about using weights. No, you say that to a person who does sports karate, who maybe just relied on strength or conditioning to be able to do their kata. But then when you tell them, no, you don't really have to do that. You could just use your body a little bit more efficiently. They are much more open to that idea versus, you know, say a person that learned it traditionally. Or not. And by the way, I'm guilty of that because I learned Shimaha Shorinryu. So when I sometimes hear from other people, this is how maybe you should do it like that. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit like kind of thing. But the people like you, like yourself, or some other people that came to our dojo who are from a sports background, they're much more open to those concepts. They're like, oh, okay, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to play around like a Rubik's Cube. They're going to like play around with the idea for like a couple hours or days or even years. And then they eventually either adopt it or they just say, for another time kind of thing. But I think in that sense, the sports karate realm is much more open to concepts. But then, you know, that opens another can of worms that I don't know if you want to talk about
that. Talk about.
The one thing that I feel about that is that then that come that opens up into that new thing that there are no styles in karate, in which I kind of have a bit of like a wait a minute, okay, hold your horses there kind of thing. It's okay, like,
lay it on me.
Yeah. I feel this one thing about this is that it's like, remember I said like I was able to do that Goju-Do stuff. Or Goju-Do, not stuff, excuse me, that's very rude. The Goju-Do practitioners. Goju-Do karate because I had a base in Shimaha Shorinryu. And I think it's like I also come from an art school, but it's like you need to learn how to draw a circle before you could draw, you know, something a little bit more complicated. And I really believe that you need to have a very strong base.
Yes.
Like to have a very strong base. And then you could like, again, take in concepts. Mm-hmm. But like to say that Uechi-Ryu and this, then, or Uechi-Ryu, Shorin-Ryu, Shitori-Ryu, blah, 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 blah. They're all the same. There's no such thing as styles, and we can all just mix them together. Kind of thing. It kind of like for me, I'm like that. In the end, the objective of karate is the same, but the way you do it is, you know, different. Whatnot. That's I can agree with that. But to say that we could all mix it together is a little bit like I don't know about that. That seems a little bit, you know, disrespectful to those masters who made those styles. I think there's a reason why we have the styles. I think it's important that we respect each and every single one of them without kind of like, you know, I don't want to be rude to anyone, but like to just say like, oh, I do Shitori-Ryu, but I can also put in Uechi-Ryu kata into my Shitori-Ryu. It's like, I don't know about that.
Yeah. That one's a little tough. That one's a little tough.
Yeah.
So
it's a tough one.
What I would say kind of is because what's happened when I first started competing in the late 90s, it was very style specific. And what I mean is if you were a Shitori-Ryu person, you did Basaidai Seiichin, because we still had the Stay Gata back then, you know, even WKF competition still had mandatory kata. You did Nipai Po and you did the Shitori-Ryu Super Rinpei, and you know, maybe there were, you know, you did Kosokun Dai, right? Or Kosokun Shou, Kushanku Shou, Kushanku Dai. And it was you did the Shitori-Ryu Unshu. If you were Shotokan, you only did Shotokan. If you were Goju, you only did Seipai, Kururumpa, Super Rinpei, and maybe, you know, Seisan or something like that. So it was very regimented on what kata that you did. And I remember speaking with, even in the late 90s, early 2000s, speaking with one sensei on the mainland, and I was asking her about Anan. And she's like, I don't do Anan. That's not a Shitori-Ryu kata. Like that's whatever, you know, because Sakamoto sensei had already won, he'd already retired then. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you would see Anan once in a while. You know, there Tomishiro Azusa, I think, was competing at the national level then. And so, I remember asking this one sensei, and I was like, hey, what about this kata Anan? And she's like, I don't know that kata. That's not our kata. Why would we do that kata? Now fast forward 25 years, 25 years, that sensei's students are now doing Annan and competing, and everybody does Annan. And so at the superficial level, when you go to, for example, I know there's a Hong Kong athlete, the male Hong Kong athlete, who is a Shotokan practitioner originally, but doesn't do any Shotokan kata in competition. Only does, you know, Ryu and Supadenpei and all of the competition kata, if you will. So on the superficial level, competition has kind of become an equalizer.
Yeah.
And totally. So, you know, there there are people from Shitoryu who are doing Yuedyu kata, and Yuedyu people are doing Goju kata, and, you know, Shotokan people are doing whatever kata they want to do. And some are very strict Shotokan, and then some of people are like, well, I'm going to take this kata, and I'm going to do this kata, or I'm going to do whatever it takes to win. And so there's kind of a leveling of the playing field. It's almost superficial, if you will. And so... I will agree with you that it's the sometimes these they're open to importing new ideas, because on the one hand, I see competition as the goal of competition is to win, right? So if I can take this, it's not for self-defense, and it's not, again, not a judgment call. I'm heavily involved in competition. We're talking on the Apex Karate Performance podcast here and channel. So that's you know. But the goal is not self-defense. It's not bunkai. It's not full contact. It's to get that gold medal in specific WKF competition. And so whatever it takes to win is okay.
Exactly. Yeah. In that sense, I kind of respect him almost and whatnot. It's kind of like that motto, like whatever it takes to win. So it's less like it's like for them, it's like they're open to any and most new concepts, because if that allows them to, you know, win this Premier One League, if that allows them to advance the next round and whatnot, they're not against using it, you know. Right. And it's not like you know, some people say like, oh, I was taught to have my fist this way, or I was taught to have my fist this way. It's like it's not in a sense, since they're not trying to preserve a style, you know what I mean? Like, you know, preserve something. They're much more open to like, okay, if this allows me to win, well then why not try it? And so in that sense, I really respect that. I think they're a better person than me in that sense. Cause you know, for me, like I said, it comes from, for me a little, sometimes when I'm introduced to a new concept, I'm a little bit like, can that actually work? Kind of thing. So
I understand.
Yeah. That's the little, you know, I don't know, stubborn part of me, maybe, perhaps.
Well, but the other thing I want to do, touch base again on, is kind of go back to what you just said, though, because I do, on one hand, on the, you know, as I said, it's the kind of the leveler, but I also agree that you have to maintain, or you have to hold what you've got. And I'll give you an example, because I have a student who you haven't had the chance to meet yet, because you haven't had the gashiku yet, but his name is Ismail. And
Ismail.
Yeah. And so
he's working hard, by the way.
He is putting in phenomenal work.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, he just went to nationals and he didn't get the result that he wanted, but you know, he's got other competitions coming up, and he's going to start competing internationally soon. But the other night we were working on Rohai. And so we were, you know, that's our kata. And, you know, he's even, you know, doing the drop at the end that I can't do because of my knees very often. I can only do it a couple times, you know, but doing everything. And then he did the last two shitoke at the end. And I was like, okay, so what kata are we doing here? Well, we're doing Rohai. Well, okay, well, you know, and I'm going to kind of embarrass him and put him, you know, out here in this. But I was like, well, why are you doing shitoke like shitoryu? You know, when we do your competition kata, this is what I want you to do over here. But now you have to be able to switch and do our proper movement. You have to be paying attention to what you're doing. This is our kata now. This is not for competition. And so you have to be able to do, you have to move your hand the right way and you have to be able to switch gears. And so that highlighted, again, the importance of maintaining your base, your foundation, I guess. You can still do these other things as long as you're not letting what you're doing over here come back and influence or change what you're doing on your
foundation? I mean, how you said it is probably the best way for me of what I was trying to say. In that sense, it's I mean, I think that it's like, for me, deep down inside, because this is maybe a part of me that, because I like the practical application of karate. It's like, there's a reason why the movement was made that way. It was, right. There was never, it's not because, well, I mean, sometimes it was just so you learn how to do a certain body movement, or you're doing this so it teaches you how to do something. There's many things like that. But it was also, I remember being told this by Xiang, the kata is never wrong, is what he told me. And ever since I was a kid, I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Kind of thing. Because I thought, you can't fight a person with a kata. But then it was the movements, what you are doing, those movements in the kata is not wrong. That is the basis that allows you to do whatever you're trying to do, whether that be a throw or strike or getting out of the way or avoiding or parrying or whatever you're doing. The basis is laid down. So the kata is never wrong. So to say, well, Shitoryu does strike like this, so we could just put that Shito strike into Shorinryu kata. It's like, that's not enough. It's right. The same technique by name, but the concept is completely different. So you can't really mix those two together. It's the one thing that I've always kind of had a little bit like, eh.
Right. You're exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah, so that was the only thing that I was like, no, kind of thing.
Well, and even that, like sometimes with myself, and that's why, I obviously not being able to train, with you or with Shihan or anything like that,
right.
for a while, it's one thing I have, like I people who've heard me talk before say, know that I'm a big fan of video and recording myself and then looking at it, because since right. I don't have Shihan there to look at me on a regular basis right now, I sent him kata a couple weeks ago and I was like, here, this is what I'm working on right now. Can you please take a look and things like that? But I have to be cautious of that myself. Even
right.
when I'm doing my own training, am I doing something because that's what I've done in the past, or am I doing something because this is what Shihan said, or am I doing something because it just like I'm not sure what I'm doing? And so being, I think as if we want to, as karate practitioners who want to continue to drive our art forward, that's something that we have to be aware of in ourselves all of the time,
right.
as to why am I doing what I'm doing?
It's a lot of, I think like, the last time that I really felt that I was doing kata, just, the next movement is this kind of thing, like, kind of, how can I say, kind of like the best way I describe it is kind of doing kata blindly. You just do it because you know it.
Right.
I think that last time was when I was like, maybe in my teenage years.
Right.
Because I wasn't really thinking about like, what am I doing with my body? It was around my college years in which I was like, okay, what am I doing here? Say, couldn't I do this or couldn't I do that? So it really started. So back then for me, it was like kata training was how many times can I do this? Like, let's just do tata and yada kusanku like 10 times in a row. Okay, right. That's a good day's training. Versus now, it's like I'll do it twice, but it's like it takes me around an hour to do it one time to be like, okay, what am I doing here? How can I move here? How can I do this? And it's like, oh, and then I always have these like notebooks and whatnot. And I have piles of them in my closet, but it's just a bunch of these concepts. Maybe do this, maybe do this step here. Instead of, don't step back, one step forward, do this, do that, open the hips, close the hips, hold the body when you're doing these movements. And it's just a bunch of like, it's like a puzzle and whatnot. And then at the end of the day, it's mostly, most of the time it's I didn't accomplish anything because it's just none of the concepts works that day. And then sometimes it's like that might work, and then very few times it's something clicks, and that's when you go to Shihan and ask him, is it this? And then that's the real like heart in your throat moment, because he says, what were you doing? Or no, it's not that complicated. It's actually just this, or work on that kind of thing. And when you're told work on that, then it's like, is it right or is it not right kind of thing. So then you do it and he's like, and then, you know, you show him after a couple months, and it's like, no, you're doing it completely wrong. What I meant this kind of thing. So it's like, I guess it's just that process now where it's like, I'm not doing kata blind per se now. It's a lot of, as you say, what am I doing or why am I doing this?
So yeah. It's funny that you say that because, you know, many people are not used to that. Most people are not used to that type of training, or that type of feedback. And so, you know, just like I said, I sent Shihan a couple of kata videos, and his feedback, which I'm not going to share right now on public, but it was, it's one of those things to where you have to ask yourself, like, what does that mean? Right. It's a very cryptic Oshiro sensei answer in that.
Right.
Because when he, I feel this is Michael just speculating, is that when he gives that type of answer, he's trusting. He recognizes that you've put some thought into it. And so you're trying. And,
right,
you know, again, this kind of is kind of an old school way of thinking, but he's not going to just hand the answer out.
Oh yeah, never.
If he can make you think through the concepts,
right,
and try to come up with an answer yourself, you know. And when we started before we started recording, you talked about how, you know, he's still training on his own, so he is still at, you know, Shihan is 72 now, 71, 70,
72.
Yeah. So yeah. He's at his age, he's still going off in the corner and he's still going to the, you know, out by himself doing things, and where he's swinging his bow and he's practicing kata and he's doing all of his things. And then he'll come back and be like, okay, well, we're going to make an adjustment because, you know, I figured this part out finally. And I think that he gives us that type of feedback because he looks at you and he looks at me and he looks at some of our other fellow students. It's like, okay, they're trying to think through the karate. Mm-hmm. And so I want them to continue to grow and to think on their own. And I'll point them in the right direction sometimes, you know, and give them that nudge. But I want them to continue to develop the concepts on their own, which is what he's doing on his own.
Right. I think the thing is that this is a very Japanese thing, and I think this is, again, oh, by the way, I think I just want to tell to the listeners or whatnot, when it comes to this, is that I am of Japanese birth, but I was raised in America. So like I said in the beginning, I'm American through and through. So the idea of being taught is being told everything, you know, kind of thing. Like that's the American way. It's just like, teach me. It's like, okay, A to Z, like 1 through 10, this is how we do it, kid, go make apple pie. Or something like that. But in Japan, and especially Oshiro sensei, because in this sense he's very much a traditionalist, and I actually like it that way. Is at first I did not like it because I kind of felt that it was like, you know, deliberately made hard. But I think the thing is that what you said, what he makes us to think about the concept, is because he says, we'll keep working on it. He doesn't say tell what to work on it. But the thing is that what we said is that to have gotten to that point for him to say keep working on it means that we thought it through. Right. And he says, well, there's something else that you did that you're missing. So give it some more thought. And I think in order to work on that more, we have to do that part. So that means konashi. We have to repetition and whatnot. So then by the time he actually tells you, well, it's actually this kind of thing, you've done it so many times that it's not an alien concept to you anymore. They'd be like, ah, I could do it. Versus if you're just told A to Z, then I think this is a very human thing and whatnot. And I think maybe this is just more me, not other people and whatnot per se. But if I'm told this is the final product, this is what it should be, I don't focus on the process. I just focus on the finished product.
Right.
Like I want that versus, you need to focus on this and then you'll get to that kind of thing. And I think the Japanese method of teaching in that sense is what I like, where it says, I entrust you with the process. And then once you have gotten to the point where I think you have made enough progress within the process, then I will show you the finished product. Kind of. And I think that's the way Japanese, well, the way he teaches karate. And I think the other thing is that it requires effort. Like, you know, it just being said, what is this? And then someone just gives it to you. Then in a sense, personally for me, I remember one time being taught directly by a different sensei within the dojo, very gracious sensei, in the sense that he taught me many, many concepts when I was like, what am I doing here? He taught me right away, this is what we're doing, whatnot. I didn't really think of anything else but the final product. I was all like, oh, okay, I know it and whatnot. But then when it came time to do it within the kata, I couldn't do it because I never studied it deep enough to have this, to know what I'm doing. So with Shihan, it's like, you need to put in the effort, you need to put in the time. And you need, like you said before, in the beginning of the podcast, you need to show me that you're devoted enough to get to that point. And then, okay, I will show you a little bit of that. And that little nut, and by the way, when I mean by a final product, he'll show you a tidbit of it. It's like, it's just enough to keep you hooked, to be like, I see something. And then I think that's another thing of him. He shows you a little bit, because then he's trying to see if you're looking at the most minute of details, whatnot. Right. And it's like, it's like a back and forth. And I think one time, I heard another Japanese sensei, he's a Kenjutsu sensei. I heard a long time ago, and I was reading I think it was a book. And he said, a teacher, sensei, is like a bell. The harder you hit it, the more it rings. So it's the same thing, that you have to put in a lot of effort and then it reverberates back to you. So it's right. A lot of this push and pull. Some people, they feel that they kind of get slighted when you've done all this effort and then you're only shown a little bit. So it's like, what is this kind of? And I understand that feeling. Mm-hmm. And whatnot, as an American, when I first, I was like, I'm putting all this time and effort. Why am I not taught more kind of thing? And it's because, you know, I didn't put enough time. I didn't put enough thought into the matter.
I agree completely, because I've had that very similar experience. I remember, you know, and this kind of goes back into a way of training and a way of thinking about things and how to progress. I remember Oshiro sensei, you know, the first time he told me to lift my back muscles, right? He's probably heard him say that, you know,
that's a common thing,
right?
Hiking. Yeah.
Yep. You know, and he probably told me that in one of my first, you know, my first few days in the dojo there in Redwood. And first, I had no idea what he was talking about. So I have to understand,
right?
How do I do this? And so I had to think about it. And he can't, you know, he's like, oh yeah, just lift them up. Like, just learn how to use your muscles. And so there's that. And then he's like, you know, instead of moving with your feet, like move from here or move this way. And so those concepts, you know, it's, you know, again, I think it's the very, that not American, that more of that Japanese way of thinking. Here, I'm going to give you a nugget and I'm going to show you what I want you to do. And I'm going to demonstrate it, but I'm not going to tell you how to do it yourself just yet. And so I was like, oh, that's what he meant. You know, it was like, oh, I get it. I get it now. Finally, after you're trying it for so long and, you know, and things like that. And I think that's hard for, like you said, I think for a lot of people to in today's world, or, you know, especially most Americans that, you know, we're familiar with dealing with and teaching and coaching and things like that, is it's hard to get that. But on the flip side, I understand why, because sometimes I've caught myself, you know, again, I'm an American. I try to give so much that they're not
right.
That and many times they're not ready to understand yet.
Right. Or they get confused. They're like, you know, I remember I think people could hear from our passion with karate is that we kind of get a little bit over passionate with karate. And this is
never been accused of that, Kenji. Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. Totally. But I feel that, like, you know, for an example, a really good example is how Shimoji Sensei or how Oshiro Sensei, they could kind of detach that passion. Like, they're extremely passionate about karate, but when it comes to like teaching someone, like for example, like a yellow belt, you're not going to go in there and be like, by the way, in this kata, you're putting on a joint lock, and then after that, you take him to the ground, you rough him up, kind of like we want to teach that. I think that a lot of people want to do the fun stuff, but in reality, that yellow belt, that fourth little yellow belt, just like, look, I'm just trying to figure out how to do A from B. Don't put all this stuff onto me and whatnot. And I've been taught many times graciously by my other senseis and whatnot. So it's like, look, we get it. You love this stuff, but take it slow for these people and whatnot. And I think it's the same thing where it's just like, I think that that method of teaching, that process method of teaching, allows people to slowly get to, you know, this, to that point of understanding. And then again, like we just said, it builds that base that allows you to do whatever, you know, you want to achieve. So yeah, I mean, it's cryptic, it's difficult, and sometimes it's a little bit like you kind of catch yourself being like, well, I've been doing this for like, you know, 3 months, the same darn thing 3 months, and nothing new's happening. But it clicks sometimes, you know, and then when it clicks, it is probably one of the most satisfying feelings.
Absolutely. And that actually ties in with something that we started to have a conversation about. You asked me a question a while back and I sent you a very long response, but then you never gave your point of view. So I'm gonna ask it.
Oh, okay.
You asked me how I judge a student's knowledge or understanding.
Right.
And you said that your perspective or your point of view is different than or in contention perhaps to a lot of other instructors or senseis. And so kind of the short version of my answer was it depends on the student, and it also depends on where they're at in their karate journey, whether they're, you know, beginning, intermediate, whether they're like a shodan or whether it's nidan, sandan or higher, my expectation of what their knowledge and how I judge it. But a lot of times, like the way I perceive that is not just their technical or their physical capabilities, but their ability to answer my questions and explain it back to me in a way that makes me believe that they actually understand it, or that demonstrates that they understand it. They're not just parroting back and repeating the same things that I say to them. So that's kind of, and again, and then my scale will adjust based on their experience level. But what is your way to put you on the spot just a little bit? What is your, how do you judge a student's knowledge and understanding?
So the thing is, for me, that I felt very much about that is that obviously what you said, I actually am in agreement with pretty much everything that you said there. That was pretty much how I view it, as with one thing that I felt that maybe it's not per se, like, how can I say this, it's not in contention, I think that maybe it's a little bit different contrast of that is that for me it was I maybe it's that influence from Shihan and whatnot and everything. It's like, to come to me with something that this person has actually studied, not me asking the questions, then just being like, you know, do this, do that, like me telling them and then they do it for me. Like at one point or another, they just say, is it this? And I was like, you're giving it some thought, I think. And then in that sense, like, okay, then we could go into a little bit more deep concepts and whatnot. In that sense, like, you know, and some people say, well, that's never going to happen until, you know, at a certain level. And it's like, yeah, of course, I'm not going to expect, you know, like white belt or someone who just started, whatnot. But when it gets to a level of like past intermediate, it's like, for me, I personally feel that if a person would starts to ask a question, like, is it this or is it this? And it goes to show them that they're not just taking in information and just trying to do what I told them to do, but actually really taking in the concepts and then just being all like, how does this apply to my body type? How does this apply to how I do it? Everything like that. And they say, well, I tried doing this, I tried doing A, B, and C. Is it perhaps D, or is it perhaps F or G or whatever? And it's just like, oh, okay, you're really giving it some thought. So now we could delve into it deeper. So, I mean, everything you just said, that, for me, I was just like, okay, how can I put this in two words? But that was, yeah.
It's funny that you actually said that, because that you use that as the thing that, because that made me think about when I look at other people that I've trained, and there are ones that will come back with those type of questions. Hey, I'm having an issue with this. Am I thinking about this the right way?
Right. Yeah.
When I'm doing this move, how should I be framing this mentally so that I can be doing it? And so when those people are asking me those questions, exactly like you said, like, okay, I completely disagree with what you just said. Like I think your answer is the person. Like I don't think you're thinking about it the right way just yet. And I'm gonna
help
you, but I am very grateful, and I understand that you're thinking about it and that you're thinking enough to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And then I have others who don't have those questions. And so it's like, okay, we're not quite there yet.
Right.
You know,
and the other thing for me is that I don't know I don't really consider myself an instructor, because I don't have my own dojo, and I don't have any students who are directly to me. So I don't view myself as an instructor, but as an assistant instructor to Shimon Sensei, and of course, Osuda Sensei. When a person asks me a question that I don't have an answer to at that moment, that's when I'm like, ooh, that's a good one kind of thing. And some people might be like, they might take it as a shot to their self-esteem or something like that. But for me, I'd be like, I never gave it that. I never thought of it in that light. So give me some time kind of thing. Yeah. Like, and that for me, I think that's when it doesn't matter whoever this person is, if they're higher rank, lower rank, or if they have no idea of karate whatsoever. When they ask me that question, it'd be like, I need to work on that kind of thing. Like then in a sense for me, then it's kind of like, okay, I have something to work on now to kind of like unravel this. And then maybe the answer was already there and I just didn't know it. Or maybe it is a concept that I never really actually gave thought to. Maybe I thought this is just some, irrelevant thing that I don't need to give it time or thought about. And then, but then when you're asked about that, it's like, oh, then I should, give it some thought and really come back to it. And I had a couple of senseis that would like to end a dojo when it came up to them. Like, so sensei, like, other than Osuda sensei, I was like, what am I doing here? And I had one very gracious sensei that was like, you know what? I don't know, but I'll get back to you on that. And it was 4 months after I asked him this question. He comes back to me. He's just like, Kenji, do the kata here. I'm like, Why are you asking me to do this? But anyway, as I did, he's like, there, right there. See, remember when you asked me this? And I was like, wait, when did I ask you this kind of thing? and he's like, I figured it out. So this is what maybe, and he said, he said, this is how I think of it. It's like this, this, and this. Maybe you should check it with Siha. This is how it probably goes. And I was like, at that moment, I was like, oh, wow, I felt really grateful that he actually took time to listen to this snotling that, had a green belt and was just, and went up to him and be like, what am I doing here? Kind of thing. He's like, you know what, kid? I never really thought of that, but hold up. Kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
And I think that's, something that I, as a future instructor or someone as an instructor would like to, kind of like, maybe push people more as like not to question the sensei, not to question everything that a sensei says, like do this why not. Instead of that, it's more like when you're by yourself after you've been told this by the sensei, do this, why don't you try this, why don't you try that, and then you're just by yourself, like again, like with a Rubik's cube, and you're like, is it this or is it that, and you have like these two little forks in the road, and then you go to your instructor and be like, I'm at a fork in the road. Is it this or that? Kind of thing. And he says, actually, no, just keep going straight ahead, or take the left, take the right, or something like that. Or actually, no, make a U-turn, and you have to go this way, kind of thing. Like, I think that's very important. But it's first listen to your instructor, work on it, and then kind of, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's where, like, even that mm-hmm. instructor, you know, that's the type of instructor that we should aspire to be. Right. Where we can, it's not just do what I say because I'm the instructor and I've been doing it longer. It's like, because it's all a pattern of growth and, you know, like, again, it was, you know, not to get too philosophical, but that's why it's karate do, right? It's a path. It's a way. None of us are born knowing it. We have to continue to learn it, but it's also as the instructor, not having so much of the ego that you can't admit that you don't know something. You know, that I tell my athletes all the time, don't accept what I tell you 100% just because I tell you to do it this way. Right. Mm-hmm. You have to, because sometimes maybe what I'm telling you is what I figured out. Maybe it's something that mm-hmm. Oshiro sensei said, or something some other sensei said, or something that I figured out because of the way my body works. But if you have an ankle mm-hmm. issue, for example, and what I'm telling you doesn't work, maybe we need to find a different way. But if you keep forcing, trying to do it, sensei said, do it this way, and so I have to do it this way. Mm. You know, you have to be able to say, okay, this isn't working for me. Why isn't it working for me? Did I misunderstood what you said? Or is it not working because of physical limitation or something like that?
Right.
But you have to be, as an instructor, you have to be continue to grow. But then also as the student, you have to be thinking about it and trying to grow yourself rather than strictly going along, following along.
Like following the dogma. Right. And just like, and the thing is that, again, it comes down to that thing with like styles and whatnot, right? It's just like in a sense, some people like view their style as like almost like a religion mm-hmm. and whatnot, everything like that. And to be completely frank, I kind of do believe that for me, who, you know, studied Shimaha Shodin do for 23 years now, 22, 23. I don't know. I forgot when I started, but for such a long time that it's like, yeah, it kind of is. It's like I eat, sleep, dream, karate kind of thing. So it's like, I get that, whatever. But it's, again, it's that same thing of just constant growth. It's like, I think this is, you know, everyone has said this, like, you know, with karate, it's like, it never ends.
Right.
But I think that with, especially what you said, it's like you have to make adjustments to your body. So, you know, for me, I have longer legs than most Japanese people. Mm-hmm. So I can't, you know, there's some movements of getting down low that are just like, it's not as easy for me versus, you know, some other people. So it's like, okay, you got to make the adjustments. You know, you have to move your hip or something quicker than, say, these people. You can't copy that. You can't copy paste. So it's a lot of like, you know, yeah, it's a lot of filling the blanks and studying. And I understand that could be frustrating for some people where they just don't get that result. It's like, why can't I not be like this person? Why can I not be as fast? And I think, that delves into a lot of things of looking outside of kind of like, you know, whatnot. Like, you know, to be completely frank, I learned a lot about body control by looking at like these street dance kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh wow, they really isolate that body because they do this. Like, oh, right. Maybe you can kind of do that kind of thing. Just like, it's like, I think it's be open to inspiration,
right?
And I think that the one thing that I always felt that is that it's like be open to inspirations, but like the answer always lies within the style, I feel, karate style. But it's like, maybe there needs to be an outside nudge that then pushes you through direction back into your style. Oh, mm-hmm. It was there all along.
Yep.
So it's it's a lot of that, I think. Yeah.
So we've been going on here for a while, and I know you've got a busy day and work and things like that. So I want to start wrapping up, but there's one last thing that I want to talk about here real quick. And because you've kind of touched about it briefly, and you said you're not an instructor yet and you don't have your own dojo, but in the past we've talked and that you want to have your own dojo someday. Is that right?
Oh yeah. But that's like a, a very big, you know, dream of mine to have my own dojo. Yeah.
Well, so now I want to ask you Kenji's vision. Okay. If we can go to a make-believe land, a fairy tale land where organizations and styles, and you're not bound, you're not constrained by anything. Mm. What would Kenji's dojo look like? What would the training be like? Because you've talked about like Bogu Kumite, right? Like we had a discussion briefly about Nihon Kempo and things like that. And so, like, you know, you've done some, you've trained for some competition, Bunkai, Yamanedu, you know, what would Kenji's dojo look like if it was like you could do whatever you wanted?
I think the thing is that the biggest thing that I would just like to follow in the footsteps of Shihan is like really make a dojo that's like family. Like, it feels like a family and whatnot. I think that's the most important thing that I would like to keep. Like, I mean, Otsuru Sensei to me is kind of like a father figure to me and whatnot. And then if I could kind of keep that, you know, that huinki, I think that I don't know atmosphere. How to say that in English.
Atmosphere,
there you go. Yeah, that atmosphere is very important. But if I had my way of doing it, I think, you know, I would like to make my dojo a little bit more hands-on, maybe, perhaps. Like, of course, kata and basics is the fundamentals. Like if you don't have that down, then there's no point in, like, if you're not going to practice basic kihon and kata, then it's not karate anymore. I feel that that's the case. But after that, like, to make it more hands-on, to really make it feel like they're like, oh, I'm doing these concepts. So I would like to maybe add applications and whatnot. And then if people are up for it, maybe a little bit of Bogu, you know, instead of, well, not more, not in Kempo style, but like, you know, with Yamanedu, maybe a little bit of Bogu with that and whatnot. Just to just kind of have the feel of that, you know, of the ball, what I'm doing, my body. And then, like, you know, kind of like building that confidence, like, you know, it's just like, yeah, you know, going against someone with a bamboo stick might not be a fun experience, but then, you know, just building that confidence and whatnot. And then, you know, breaking a little bit of a sweat, you know, having like a bit of friendly competition within the dojo. Like that's like a core belief that I always wanted, is that have that family atmosphere and build on the basics, but also show the fruits of your labor, kind of thing. You did this kata. We've done these movements. I've taught you these biomechanics, but then now it's time to see why you're doing this kind of thing. And so, in that sense, then they could be like, "Oh, this is why I've been doing this all along. This is pretty fun. So I would like to keep doing that." And I think I remember hearing from one of your podcasts, there was an individual that said, "I was shown a why. That is why it continued," and everything like that. And that really struck a chord in with me, because that was exactly the same thing with me, Otsuru Sensei. It was a very simple thing. I still remember to this day. It was Hyugatani. And he showed me an application, very simple, nothing fancy or not. And as a kid, I was hooked. It's like that right there is all the reason. And it's, until that point, I was just doing Hyugatani because I was just being told, do it however many times. And he said, "Come here, kids. I'll show you. This is actually what you're doing." And from that point, I was like, "Oh, this is I like kind of thing." And so that's the only reason why I've continued. It's like there was no, I guess there was no really like higher calling in that sense. It was just like I like it because I was shown a why, and I want to keep doing that. I want to figure out more whys, kind of thing. I think that piquing that curiosity and kind of bringing more people into that fold is, I think, the ultimate goal. Like, just to have people be like, "Oh, this is fun." I mean, it's self defense. The concepts are a little brutal per se, but it's fun for people to be like, "Oh, today I learned something new." And if that brings in another person that would like to continue it for, you know, just like, since like you, Sensei, or anyone else for a long time, I think that's ultimately the goal I would like to achieve, you know.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for saying that. And I think that that right there is probably going to be the best place to end it. So I want to thank you for spending some time with me today. And I want to thank you for this great conversation that we've had. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to get back to Okinawa to where we can train together in person again soon.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. I mean, hopefully, I'm getting my vaccination jab. So in, I think on the 23rd, my second one. So that's going to be a trip. But after that, hopefully, you know, you could come to Okinawa and then we could train, you know, lots and lots and lots in Budokan or maybe Shimotsu Sensei's dojo then.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So again, thank you very much for being with me today. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Sensei.
All right. So, so for everybody else, you heard it from Kenji, you know, keep having that attitude of improvement, have fun, create that environment that's like a family and keep training hard. So you know what to do. Go get to work and we'll see you out there.